Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, June 8th, 2017. And with me today, I have Jeff Butts. How are you, Jeff?
Pleased to be here, I am.
Oh, I'm so glad you were able to get that jump flight over from Dagobah. I do appreciate that.
Yes.
And Jim Tanis from Tech Review, who's also helping us out today so that I can actually make it back to Colorado at some point. Jim, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, and I fear Disney's lawyers terribly, so it's just me today. No animated puppets.
That's okay. You are wonderful just as you are.
Oh, you lie, but thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know. Hey, also, we have sponsors all week for WWDC, and that includes GigSky, Mac Sales, Readle, Sanebox, and iMazing. We'll be talking about Readle in just a few minutes. But since we have you here, Jim, and you haven't had an opportunity to talk about your take on anything from Worldwide Developer Conference, here you are. And we were talking before the show, and it sounded like you were kind of interested in what's going on with the iMac.
Yeah, I mean, this was, as I'm sure you've discussed previously, this was probably Apple's most exciting keynote in years. They just had one hit after another. They wasted no time, lots of products. Not every product or service is for everybody, but they had a lot of great stuff. But the thing that really interested me was the iMac, both on a personal note, because I need to get a new iMac, and I've been waiting because they hadn't updated them since late 2015. Mm-hmm. But also because they really, made some exciting advances. The standard iMac is going to be Kaby Lake based with a i7-7700K, which is currently Intel's top consumer level CPU. It's a 4-core, 8-thread part, so good performance there. AMD Radeon RX 580 GPUs, which are, again, they're not the top, but they're pretty good considering what Apple has included as a GPU option in previous iMacs. They're pretty good, and as Apple noted, they're capable of VR content creation and playback. So partnering with companies like Steam and Unity and Epic, there's going to be some really exciting new VR stuff coming for Mac owners, both in terms of like sort of that productivity side of it, that educational side of it, but as well as gaming, as they had some pretty cool demos I'm sure people have seen by now at the keynote. And on top of that, obviously adding Thunderbolt 3 was huge because that was the one big product that it hasn't gotten it yet. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the iMac Pro, which won't be out till later this year. But that, again, is very interesting. I'm curious to see that in person because Apple's previous iMac designs, even though they've had equivalent PC hardware, were thermally limited because of how thin and small the case is. So, a 6700K and an iMac is not going to perform the same as a 6700K with a dedicated liquid cooler and a PC. So they're putting these high-end Xeon components, high-end graphics cards in the iMac Pro. So it's going to be interesting to see how this new dual fan cooling that they touted really does work and how those components will compare in the iMac versus compared in a traditional PC workstation.
You know, this is exactly why I'm so glad you're here today, because I hadn't even been thinking about the heat and how that would impact overall performance. And that's actually a big thing, because if you're using the iMac Pro as a pro machine, you probably want as much performance out of that thing as you can get. So if it's not going to perform at the same level as a comparable PC, that might be a problem.
Yeah, and the fact will remain that as of the time it's released, unless Apple comes out with a new Mac Pro before then, which I don't think they are, I think Tim Cook officially said that's not coming till 2018, but at the time it's released, it will be the fastest Mac, even if it's severely thermally limited, just because the components that are going into it are have a baseline performance that's so much higher than other Mac options. So if you want to work in the Mac OS ecosystem, like if you really want to be in that environment, that's going to be your best option, even if it doesn't perform quite as well. Because even though apps like Final Cut Pro, Apple lost some users when they revamped that app a few years ago, but they've really added a lot of the features back, and a lot of people like Final Cut Pro. A lot of people like Motion instead of using Premiere or Avid or something else. And so if you are in that boat, you've got to stick with Mac. And so this is going to be your best option. So they're going to capture customers regardless, just because it will be the fastest option available.
Oh, sure. And I have spoken with several people at WWDC and AltConf who have told me that they're just planning on buying one. And they don't even know all the specs. They just know they want the most powerful Mac that Apple makes. Therefore, they're going to buy this when it comes out.
Yeah, and there's definitely that segment of Apple's customer base. And it's gonna be an interesting product for sure, and the price, it's high. It starts at $5,000. We don't know how much higher it's going to go as you start adding in those higher core processors, higher graphics cards, all that. But it is a high price. But if you add up those components, if you go to a website like PCPartPicker.com where you can kind of assemble your own computer, and you say, okay, I want 8-core Xeon. I want 32 gigs of DDR4 ECC memory. I want NVMe storage. I want a Radeon Vega graphics card. You add up those prices, you get pretty close. And then you add on top of it a 5K display, which is $1,000 on its own. Mm-hmm. You're still paying an Apple tax, but it's probably only $400 or $500 at that point, which a lot of people who love that ecosystem are going to be happy to pay.
Sure, of course.
And what I'm curious about, has anybody looked at the back of the new iMac Pro and seen how it's going to be for upgradability?
Not at all. I mean, I was going to say, I looked, and the answer is it will not be upgradable at all.
I was afraid of that. Okay.
Because Apple's come out and said that the RAM will not be user upgradable, which is different from how the current 27-inch iMac is.
Oh, yeah, it is, and I missed that.
Okay. Yeah, and they didn't say that during the keynote. They provided that to, I think it was 95 Mac. They had got a statement from a spokesperson. But then you look at the iMac, and the reason is the regular iMacs, use notebook-sized SODIMs, smaller RAM modules. The iMac Pro, according to the images on the screen, and again, we don't have any detailed tech specs, but the images that they provided on the both in the keynote and on Apple's website show sort of a revealed shot of the back where you can see the components inside. And on the left side of it, you see full-size ECC DIMMs. And those aren't going to fit in the center where they go on the regular Mac. So they're off to the side, they're full size. And so there's no way to make those easily accessible unless Apple wanted to put a giant door on the left side of the Mac, which of course they're not
going to
do
from a
design perspective. Yeah. The good news is, though, again, in those images, and they may change, the DIMMs appear to be socketed. They don't look like they're soldered on. So if you're able to get into that iMac, and opening iMacs these days, since the 2015, I think it was the 2015 redesign or so, it's very tricky. They've sort of glued the assembly together, and it's very intricate.
It's tricky, but iFixit figured out how to do it, and
yeah,
they put together a pretty good walkthrough of how to do it. It's an advanced thing to do. But it can be done.
Exactly. So if these are truly socketed DIMMs, and you're willing to, and there's no other changes to this design because we haven't seen it in person, then you should be able to, if you're willing, pry that thing open and get at the RAM.
Yeah. And it may be that you could do the same thing with the NVMe SSD.
Potentially, yep. Although Apple does use, and again, who knows going forward, but they have used a proprietary connector. So you can't just go pick up a Samsung 960 or one of these other popular M.2 drives and throw it in your Mac. You've got to get an Apple-specific one. And some companies like OWC have come out with products over time, but there's usually compromises there in terms of performance.
Right.
So we'll have to, again, we'll have to see. I mean, it would be great if they standardized on a standard M.2 connector, but it's Apple. So and it's Apple, and this will be a relatively low margin product. So I doubt it.
Right. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to interrupt our conversation for a minute because I want to talk about our sponsor who today is Riedel. And Riedel, they've been around for several years, and there were people at the beginning of the week when Apple was making all of their iOS 11 announcements that were thinking, oh, crap, Riedel's in trouble. No. They're not. Riedel's going to be just fine. The drag and drop stuff, the scanner stuff that Apple announced, things like that, those are actually going to play very nicely into Riedel's products. And I'm not concerned about that at all. But the thing is that they make this awesome email application as well called Spark, and it's just as it's an email application that was really thought through in a way that makes sense for users. And I just love that they really sat down and thought about what the user interface should be for an email application. And they even, as of now, have Terry Blanchard working on Spark. And he actually was part of Apple's mail team. So this is a guy that really understands email and email applications, and now he's working with Spark. I think that's awesome. And I'm also a big fan of their PDF Expert application, which it's a PDF reader, it's a PDF markup tool, it's a PDF editor. And it just runs beautifully both on Mac and iOS, and the products they're making are fantastic. So I'm really glad that they have been a sponsor all week long, and that they're the show sponsor today. So go check them out and check out all of their products because they're great productivity tools. Head over to their website. It's Riedel.com, Riedel.com, Riedel.com. And thanks to the Riedel team for being our sponsor today.
And if I could say too, as a non financially related party to this, thanks to them for providing great apps, because I've had Riedel apps on my iDevices since the very beginning of the App Store. So
they were there on day one.
Yeah. Calendars, the PDF scanner, PDF Expert, great apps.
Yep, absolutely. Yes. All right, so let's hop back over to the whole iMac thing. And as you two were talking right before I did our sponsor, I started thinking, based on what you're saying, that upgradability is going to be a big issue for a lot of people. So my question for you, do you think the big differentiating factor between the Mac Pro and the iMac Pro is going to be expandability?
I think it depends on who's buying it. Corporations that are buying several or boatloads of these iMac Pros for their, say, their developers or their designers, they're not going to care.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to max them out. They're going to have them ready to go, and they're not going to think about upgrading them in 2 to 5 years. More hardcore developers, especially your independent developers, your smaller companies, they're not going to have the budget to just replace their computers every 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want to be able to upgrade. So it's going to affect them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Do you think that will be enough of an issue to steer some people away from the iMac Pro?
I think a few. Yeah, they'll wait for the Mac Pro to come out because they'll be able to upgrade the Mac Pro.
Yeah, that's my assumption. And the idea that I have in my head right now is that with the iMac Pro, we're getting a teaser for what the Mac Pro will be like. The difference will be there won't be a built-in display. It won't be sealed up where it turns into this crazy technical surgery thing to get at RAM and processors and stuff. And I'm expecting it will be a form factor that does let you add and remove RAM. You may even be able to replace the processors. You'll be able to replace your video card.
Yep.
And add in extra cards as well. And while this sounds crazy and innovative on one hand, this is just what PC workstations have been forever.
Yeah. Now, on the plus side, if I remember correctly, the iMac Pro, won't it be capable of using an external graphics card through the Thunderbolt 3 or USB-C adapter?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It will, yes. Yes. But not just that device, all of Apple's current
right.
and upcoming products with Thunderbolt 3 will be able to use those external GPUs.
That's right. What I thought. Yep.
Now, from what I understand, initially at least, only the box that Apple is going to offer through whatever means they're going to do that will be the only supported GPU box. So you'll be able to replace the card in there as long as there's drivers available, from what I understand. But the actual breakout box itself, or expansion box, it has to be Apple's.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's just a limitation of this sort of alpha phase of this initiative, and that'll change. But the other factor here is that people have been using external GPU boxes on Macs since Thunderbolt came around, and they were first introduced on the PC side. I mean, you have to hack it; it's not official, but there's ways to do it. And the expectation is that once this matures, we'll see it's going to be a relatively small market, but we'll see an ecosystem of third party products come out.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I fully expect that. Another limitation, which may not be a forever limitation, it might just be because this is so early for Apple right now. Once you have a GPU expansion box connected, you have to have an external display connected to that to use the card. So it's not like you can plug the box in and then get better video on your built-in laptop display.
If you're using it for a display, yes. But if you're using it for compute or other non, like, display-related issues or display-related tasks, then no, you can still use
that. That's an important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it'll be forever, wouldn't it, that if you want to use it as a display, you'd have to have your display plugged into the box? I mean, there's not really
makes sense.
Yeah, there's no clean way to pipe the graphics to the external GPU, then pipe it back to go through the Mac's display port.
Yeah, I don't believe there's any clean solution for that.
No, although someone's going to figure out a system that works where you plug a cable into the video out on the card and then plug it back into a Thunderbolt 3 port on your computer. So now you've made this big loop of data that's going in and out. And I say that like, you can just plug this together. I know it's so not a trivial thing to do, but someone, I bet, will figure it out. Now, before we wrap up, because we're getting close on time.
Okay.
I need to share one of the things that Craig Federighi said during John Gruber's talk show live, and it related to the whole external GPU thing. And there's been a lot of people wondering, why hasn't this just been a thing already? What it comes down to is, since Apple controls every single element of their products, they know what they're doing with the video cards in their devices. They've never been removable. Therefore, they never coded the operating system from the ground up to support what I'll call transient GPUs, meaning something that can be there sometimes or not. So if a GPU was supposed to be there and then wasn't, okay, that's a serious problem for Mac OS because it expects the GPU will just always be there. So they had to figure out how to go and rework the video architecture in Mac OS to be able to gracefully handle GPUs that are only sometimes there.
I get that, but at the same time, they've had graphics switching in their notebooks for, like, what, 7 years?
Yes.
And yes, but the hardware is there, but they're not using it.
Right. And
but it's still there.
But it's still there. Yeah. And their mindset was when they coded everything, the hardware is just always there, whether or not you're using it.
Oh, right. I'm not saying it should have worked. I'm just saying I don't. The tone of that explanation is that it was too arduous to accomplish, whereas I think they made some good progress already a long time ago in this area. So
yeah, so the way they presented it, it made it sound like this was a very big task to be able to handle the transient GPU thing. So either that's true, or it's not. But if it is true, then what that tells me is that Apple did some weird stuff potentially with the way they coded for their GPUs that made it very fragile when they went to start accommodating truly transient GPUs.
I wonder if that might be why I've been having problems with the graphics on my current Hackintosh project.
That's possible. I mean, my feeling is at now that we're getting close to the end of this week of developers conference, is that Apple has done some very brittle or fragile coding with some of their subsystems, uh-huh. And specifically in this case with video.
Well, I know what I'm doing tonight.
I can't wait to see what you break. It's going to be awesome.
It always is, isn't it?
Yes. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Jeff, thank you for being here today.
As always, thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. And Jim, thank you so much for being here and taking time out of Tech Review to help us out today and to be on the show. You rock.
Oh, it's always great to be with you. Thanks, Jeff.
It's loads of fun. Also, thank you to Riedel for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, Riedel.com. And thank you to all of our WWDC sponsors, which includes GigSky, MaxSales, SaneBox, and iMazing. And listeners, I'm so glad that you're here joining us today. Thanks for listening. We will see everyone again tomorrow.